races, 'twas on the 9th of June, 1862, on a summer's afternoon. I took the bus to Banbury's and she was heavy laden. The way we went along Cullen Street, that's on the road to Bladen.
Yo, what's good, ladies and germs? Welcome to another episode of CHN Radio. It's your boy Elijah here on the ones and twos. I believe this is episode 211. I actually have no idea. I just put that in our notes, and it could be wrong. It could be right. You'll find out when you when you open up your podcasting app. I'm joined by the critically acclaimed podcast co-host.
Oh dear.
I mean, that could be good. That could be good. Josh.
Should be.
Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I got 210 on the notes, on the Google notes. I got 211 in the podcast episodes I've created. So I'm going with 211 as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, the title of that, of this is 211. And then I forgot to change the episode title in the note itself to 210.
I'm corroborating. I believe it's 211 based on the evidence that was presented.
Good. Well, that's good. First and foremost, I know it's been a wild off season. We've both been doing the craziness, but we're back. The season starts soon. Just a couple housekeeping things. Obviously, make sure that you are subscribed on all your podcast platforms. We should be everywhere. I'm sure some of y'all will let us know if we're at places where we shouldn't, if we're not on, like,
well, if we're in places we shouldn't be, do let us know. But also, if we're not in places you'd like us to be, let's see what we can do.
Yeah. I mean, I know some of y'all are at RIP Stitcher. Stitcher is no longer a thing. Did you know that, Josh?
Is it? No. When did that happen?
Yeah. They're shutting down. Stitcher is gone, which is crazy. We're losing that was podcast
like
OG.
That was like where, yeah, that was where it all started for me.
Yeah.
I just, OGs. I put it on and I let it roll. And that's how I learned about all of these podcasts. That's how I learned about Football Ramble, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. So, but anyway, yeah, we should be everywhere else. And make sure to subscribe, leave us 5 stars. Don't forget, if you're a Spotify listener, to rate us 5 stars there as well. Interact with our stuff, all that good jazz. And then just a couple of housekeeping notes, just so y'all know, for this season, there's going to be an increase of games. For obvious reasons, for good reason. Newcastle will be in Champions League, so podcast might look a little different. There might be a couple solo episodes from me here and there, a couple, you know, shorter bite-sized podcasts just to get some quick reactions on certain things, just because we're busy. Josh is a family. I now have a dog and a wife in law school, so sometimes we're not going to be able to record together, and so rather than starve you of content, we'll get something out as soon as possible. We're also looking into adding some folks in a rotation. So sometimes it could be me and Josh. Sometimes we might bring in some friends of the podcast like Adam or Zach or Roberto Rojas, some other people like that. So just know that the CHN, we're entering a different phase, a different era of CHN. So all that being said, let's actually get into some Newcastle. This is a Newcastle podcast. The one true black and white podcast. Right now, as we stand, preseason has just ended. Today is Sunday. Newcastle played today. They played Villarreal. They won the Sela Cup. Shout out to them. But real quick, Josh, I just want to point something out.
Mm.
We're just gonna go quickly through the Newcastle preseason. Just like matches, played a lot of matches this preseason. Starting in July, beat Gateshead 3-2. Then beat Rangers 2-1, drew with Aston Villa when that was a, I don't know if you actually got to watch that. That one was on the
I did see that one.
That was a really good one. And then drew 1-1 with Chelsea in Atlanta. I was there for that. And then 1-2-1 against Brighton. And then beat Fiorentina 2-0 and beat Villarreal 4-0 today.
That was this morning. Yeah.
Yep. So, I don't know, Josh, did you notice anything there? A certain trend of not having lost any of the preseason matches?
Look, we won the preseason. What can you say?
Yeah, undefeated. We won a trophy. We won the Sailor Cup.
We capped it. We capped it with a Sailor Cup. Fantastic. Well done. Kudos to all involved. And farewell to those that couldn't make it. But on the other hand, like, the real deal football starts soon, right? And and just it's a warm up, and I think all the players know, and I think anyhow knows it doesn't mean anything. None of that meant anything. I hope you had fun, but the real deal stuff is about to kick.
There was a couple of moments. I did want to just quickly point out two things. One, we got to see what Tonali and what his role would be at Newcastle, and this will drop this week. I did a podcast with a good buddy of mine, Martino Puccio, who has covered AC Milan. Well, he says he hasn't covered AC Milan, but the guy writes for The Athletic and also is an AC Milan fan, and all of Italian Twitter hates him. So if all of Italian Twitter hates you, you must be a journalist. So he's a journalist. he's been an AC Milan fan for as long as I've known him. And so he and I did a podcast on Tonali, but interesting to see that Tonali is likely going to be a pure eight, kind of like for like swap for Sean Longstaff. Again, nothing to put too much stock in. We'll probably do a longer preview-ish episode this week. And then the other thing is that Newcastle got a little freaky with the formations. They tried a couple formations out that to some fans didn't work. I want to say the Villa match was one of them where they played
first,
like,
half at least, right?
Yeah. They played some funky stuff where they got some wingbacks involved, some additional attackers. Intentionally playing these formations that are meant to sort of be more attacking and, you know, break down defenses that sit back against us. So that's honestly, it was to me, I was kind of excited to see that. I don't know about you, Josh, just because we kind of have discussed this past season, Newcastle not really having a clear answer for when someone's sitting back against them. So at least they're trying something.
This is when you do it. Like these matches, I know I just shot off at the mouth saying they don't count. They don't count. That's true. Thing is, like, they are still like that. Those matches in the US were full speed. Like, those were full speed. And the difference between like Newcastle playing against, you know, Gateshead or, you know, versus playing against Aston Villa in a US stadium in front of 50,000 fans, you know, is that you're playing against another Prem team, and everything around them, the whole atmosphere was Premier League, like from the billboards and from the, you know, from the digital signs and everything. This whole advertises as a Prem game. And it just, I think it ups the ante, right? And so, you know, you don't walk away with any points on the table, but, you know, Eddie Howe and company, they get to really test what works and what doesn't work against a fellow Premier League side, someone who they're going to play very soon, right? And so on the one hand, you don't want to give away what your real game plan is. You don't want to show all your cards in preseason against the very team that you got to open up against. But on the other hand, like, it's really good to see how they move and what they can do. And you can kind of test those keys and see what you could unlock.
Yeah. It is going to be interesting, especially because I do think we are entering this really weird era of football or soccer, where I cannot remember for life. I mean, as a younger coach who was a former midfielder, and someone's probably going to tell me on Twitter somewhere, but there was a coach who was playing like this two in the back formation, where like essentially there's just two center backs and in possession, and like everyone else is further up the pitch. And it was one of these, like, everyone said he was crazy for talking about it or discussing it. And the guy, again, forgive me, but this will make sense in a second. He did not have the talent to perform that. And what I've noticed is preseason across just other teams in the Prem, and Man City was doing this actually towards the end of the season, where, like, they're playing these crazy narrow formations that are, like, 2-2-2-3 or something like that, which that the numbers might have added up there. Ignore that. Man City kind of did this and, like, moved John Stones in this holding midfielder role. It's just going to be interesting to see. I think, like, right now we're in this weird era where, like, the football is so attacking that, like, I don't know, when people park the bus – coaches are having to get even more creative as to how to break that down. And it's resulting in like some very unconventional formations, and like fullbacks have already been completely transformed from what they were 10, 15 years ago. I think they're, it's going to be even more transformative. I mean, like, they're essentially going to be operating as, like, extra attackers. I mean, in some cases, similar to, like, how Kieran Trippier has operated for Newcastle a little bit, or how Trent Alexander-Arnold operates for Liverpool. Like, once they come inside, they become, like, an additional creative attacking midfielder. So, it's just, I don't know, it's going to be fascinating. But yeah, so anyway, that's preseason done and dusted. I did want to give a shout out to all of the Toon Army folks who got a chance around to see Newcastle and their East Coast tour. I know the San Diego guys got a chance to meet them. They drove across the country and basically made a whole road trip of it. Met some guys, John, Joe, other guys who've listened to the podcast for years. Josh, you actually got a lot of shout outs.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
Yeah. People were like, this guy you got with you, Josh, he's good. So shout out to them. Big shout out to John, especially because I sat down in the Brighton section and right next to me, he immediately recognized me and said, "Hey, are you Elijah?" And I was like, "Yes. Who are you?" And he's like, "I'm John. I've been following you for a while." So that was cool. But yeah, big shout out to everyone. Cool. It was really cool seeing some familiar faces, meeting some new people. Shout out to all the Geordies who bought me beer because I didn't have to buy it. So shout out to you all.
I thought it was because they thought you were a Sam Maxima.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is something that I guess it's been a while. We haven't formally addressed the Alan St. Minimum allegations. But yeah, my only thought on that is simply this. Newcastle fans, this, and I'm not the first person this has happened to, there's been so many times, like, it's honestly a little embarrassing. There's been so many times where Newcastle fans have seen a black person just existing and they're like, "Is that Alan St. Maximin?" And every single time they've been wrong. So shout out.
Well, it's either that or Leon Best, you know, and I know you're not tall enough to be a Leon Best, so
I'm not even tall enough to be Alan St. Maximin. Like, so yeah. Anyway, Josh, let's keep it moving. I know you got some stuff with the women's team.
Yeah.
The women's team that's been completely transformed.
Yeah, no, they're doing great. 2,000 Jordy showed up for an open training match recently. I mean, that's 2,000 showed up for training. That's you want to talk about transformed. That's amazing. They had a 2-1 win over Hibs at the Meadowbank Stadium up in Edinburgh. Then they had a 3-0 over West Brom in the Sela Cup at St. James's. I don't know if that was yesterday or today. And next up, they have Sunderland on Wednesday. So the Tyne-Wear Derby now is up to the lasses to go just eviscerate the Black Cats. To be quite honest with you, I hope we never play them again on the men's side. I know some people will probably disagree because they love that. I don't like that tension. I don't like that stress, but I really just don't like the team and I just don't want to play them.
Is there stress now knowing that, like, those, I mean, it's, I'm not going to say the derbies are meaningless, but like, there will be so much more. The clubs aren't similar size anymore. Like, I think in the past, like, it felt like it meant a lot because, like, Newcastle and Sunderland were always kind of either, you know, both at the bottom or both in the middle of the table or something like that. And now it's like there's not a chance. Like, I don't want to be like there's no chance, but like there really is no chance that Newcastle, like, and Sunderland are going to be on the same level, at least for the next 15 years.
It'll be infrequent that they play each other. But I mean, Sunderland were looking, they were staring down the barrel of promotion last year, and they're the kind of side that would come up. And I hear what you're saying about not being even Steven with the quality of the side or the money in the bank, but that's when the target's on you. And that's what it hurts the most, is to lose those weird ones every once in a while to a team that really had no business doing it.
Does it hurt as much if you
get over
you win,
it real
you
quick
win the
and
FA
go on
Cup
and
like and that's my thing is if Sunderland come up after this season and Newcastle continue to improve the way they are, and next season we play them and we lose one of two against them, but we make the FA Cup final, I'm like, oh man, that kind of sucks, we lost, but like that would be the first major trophy Newcastle had won in so long. So it's like there's nothing to gloat about, because like you said, they're going to be an up and down club. Like, even if they beat us that one time, or even if they do the double over us, which is unlikely, they're still like, they're going to be relegated, and we would have, you know, potentially won a cup or made Europe again or whatever. So
all of that having been said, we don't have to worry about that until the cup draws. We don't have to play them in the regular season at all. So we're good to go. I just want the ladies to beat the heck out of Sunderland on Wednesday. Go get yourself a win, Howay.
W. Okay. Sweet. So real quick, this episode's going to be a little bit shorter, hopefully. I mean, we say that every single time, and then it's an hour, but actually we're pacing pretty well for this. We're going to do a bit of a more kind of in-depth season preview / preview Newcastle's opening match against Villa in our midweek recording. But I did want to just take some time to quickly discuss what we know right now for Newcastle transfer-wise. So we'll talk about who Newcastle brought in / re-signed. And then, at least the names we haven't already talked about. I know there were some guys like Minte who we talked about like right when it happened because it was towards the end of the season or whatever. And then we'll talk about some of the outgoing transfers that we know about. We'll kind of go from there. So honestly, just so we don't, this will take 15, 20 minutes by itself. So just don't want to have to do it in the middle of the week and make that midweek episode longer than it needs to be. So, Josh, is that good with you?
Sounds good to me, man.
All right. Well, let's hop into it. The most exciting and biggest move of the summer. Let's go ahead and get it, out of the way. Paul Dummett and Loris Karius signed a year-long deals with Newcastle.
You need squad players.
Yeah, I know. I mean, honestly, like, I like this a lot. From everything that, I mean, when this happened, there was more talk about it. One, Karius is, like, a very good third-choice keeper. Like, it does seem like Dubravka is going to be the deputy guy, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later since Cardarlo is gone. And Dubravka has actually started a few of these preseason matches, has actually played pretty well, and there's going to be matches for him to play, whether that's Europe or league or cup matches, whatever it is. Karius is a very solid third keeper. And, you know, all things considered, like, he actually did quite well when he was called into action, in the cup final. I think he was perfectly fine. And then Dummett's a great locker room guy. Again, can provide some cover at center back and at left back. And apparently is like similar to Matt Ritchie in the sense that he's an extension of the coaching staff. And like, I would not be surprised if he's another name we see, you know, get their coaching license once they decide to hang up the boots. So yeah, you need squad players.
I wonder, and maybe you know, but I'm not sure. I think Dummett, is he the longest tenured Magpie?
I mean, he would have to be, right? Like, I think he would have to be because he's an academy guy and he's, 33 or something like that? So,
yeah, he's a true lifer.
He would have to be.
No, I'm really glad that he's sticking around, to be quite honest with you. So,
yeah, for sure, Skis. I agree. Because Transfermarkt is silly, I'm just going to do these amounts in euros, so bear with me. The first big signing for Newcastle, though, we must talk about it. I alluded to a podcast about this dropping later on in the week, but Sandro Tonali, a midfielder, signed from AC Milan, Newcastle's first signing of the season. Well, technically, Minte was the first actual signing, but the first big signing that would add to Newcastle immediately. Out of AC Milan, I don't need to go into detail, but he's an academy player at Brescia. Kind of people thought he'd be the next Pirlo. He's actually more like a Gattuso. Was at Brescia and then spent the last few seasons at AC Milan, where he was the captain last season, captain of the Italian Euro squad, the U23 squad. Great player. We talk a little bit more specific about what he does well in the Martino podcast, but I would call him a significant upgrade on Sean Longstaff. He does a lot of the Sean Longstaff things really well, but also has just a quality that is just leaps and bounds better than other players we've had in the midfield. Josh, what's your thoughts on Tonali becoming a Geordie and joining Newcastle?
Yeah, I'm excited. It's great to have a high profile player like that come in. I obviously don't know as much about Tonali as maybe a Milanisti might, you know, someone that is very familiar with Milan and Serie A. So I'm excited to listen to that ep that you're going to drop at some point. But you know, if what I was reading on Twitter, seeing the Milan supporters crying and very upset, besides themselves with rage, actually, they couldn't believe not only was he leaving Milan, but he was going to some half-arsed English team. They just couldn't even fathom. They're like, it's not Manchester United. It's not Manchester City. Who is this Newcastle team? And I thought, that's fucking fantastic. Like that's so great. So I look forward to seeing what he brings to the side. I'm certainly hoping that Longstaff is, there's so much football to have.
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, someone pointed out you kind of want to get to a point, and Man City's at this, Man U's at this, Chelsea's at this, where you can have two starting 11s. And then there, you know, there's always players that you pretty much will play almost every match. Like if you look at Manchester United, it's a good example. Like, you know, Rashford, he likely plays almost every match for Manchester United. If he's not starting, he's coming off the bench. Same with like Bruno Fernandes. Other guys, like, I mean, Lautaro Martinez was like one of those guys last year for them where almost every single match they played. But, you know, there was a lot of other, you know, you want depth. You want the ability to switch out guys in the midfield. You know, McTominay played sometimes instead of Fred and vice versa, all that kind of stuff. So I think Sean Longstaff will be good. And obviously, Eddie Howe's a big fan of competition in the team at all positions. And there really wasn't any competition for Sean Longstaff in his particular spot. And he still improved. And, you know, if you don't trust Eddie Howe's intuition regarding like creating healthy competition within the team, just look at how Isak and Callum Wilson performed in the second half of the season, where they both got to double digit goals because they were both essentially competing with each other for the starting striker role. So I think it only can make Sean Longstaff better, if that makes sense. The fact that someone else is coming in and competing with him for minutes, like, I think that iron sharpens iron. And I think the thing that I love the most about Tonali is that he's 23. It's just, this is good to just have a younger player that's going to be an anchor in the midfield. I love Bruno. I love like the fact that Bruno's, he's in his prime, but to have another guy that's kind of on the way and know that like we haven't seen the best of Tonali yet, and he still is a very good player. That also is just really exciting. Gives me hope.
You know what else I like about this move is that it's the amount of pressure that is going to come off of Bruno. Mm-hmm. I think not only did he need the time off that he got, he really did. I think he, by the end of last year, he was running himself into the ground. But now having someone like Tonali in there is, I think, going to, like, Longstaff is great. He did all the stuff the right way. But now Tonali's got that presence that could attract maybe a double mark or at least create some shifting of defenses. And now teams will have to not focus on Bruno. I think also we'll talk about the players out, but when, you know, you see certain players go out and they had become predictable in their attack, you're getting new faces in. And if some of these new faces can gel quickly enough, I think that we could steal wins that people are counting us out on early in the season. There are some people are telling me, "Oh, it's a hard start." Well, you've got to play all the teams twice.
Oh yeah, no, that's the thing. It's like we kind of talked about that. Yeah,
yeah, you might as well play the hard ones first because they're not expecting it, and we're going to punch them in the face and steal some points.
And it's the beginning of the season for everyone at that point. Like, I'd rather play Man City, and you've seen this before, where a team like Wolves did this a couple seasons ago. they'll play like this. They'll have this crazy run at the beginning of the season, partially because like people are still trying to figure themselves out. You know, like for the most part, Newcastle knows how they're going to play, but there's still guys that they're integrating in, and that's the same thing with Villa, with Man City. I mean, all the teams we play initially. So I'm excited for it. But yeah, that's Tonali in a nutshell. I think it's going to be a good signing. The price, I think people were a little bit concerned about, but at the end of the day, he's better. It's an upgrade to your midfield. And I mean, I think prices get like inflated transfer fees are one thing when you're bringing a player that may not improve, you know, may not have improved that winger position, for example. Like you look at like Antony and you're like, oh, was Man United better off not spending the money on Antony? That's where you can have a legitimate debate. But here it's like Tonali at this stage in his career is younger than Sean Longstaff and is better than Sean Longstaff. So it doesn't matter how much you paid for him, it's worth it. So exactly. Okay. All that to say, let's keep it moving. The next big move was Harvey Barnes coming in from a Leicester team. There was a lot of talk about potentially James Maddison coming through, but it turned out to be Harvey Barnes, who is the younger version of James Maddison for Leicester, in the sense of just another young attacking English player. Newcastle paid around 44 million euros for him. He is a player who is essentially replacing Alan St. Maximin, who we now know at around the same time was sold, and we'll get into that as well. Yeah. But I think probably the biggest thing, the biggest difference between Harvey Barnes and, you know, the comparison is going to be there, so we might as well make the comparison. Biggest difference between Harvey Barnes and Alan St. Maximin is Harvey Barnes has way more just like shots on target, crosses in, et cetera, et cetera, those types of moves, and does not have the dribbling ability that Alan St. Maximin has, where Alan St. Maximin, for a while, you know, he's got all the beat guys off the dribble, you know, stats and all the attempted dribble stats, and that is a dangerous stat in itself. But Harvey Barnes, like, takes more shots than, like, any other winger in the Prem, and has the goals and stuff to show for it. I think last season he scored, I want to say he scored 13, and I will fact check myself right now. But that's more goals than ASM has had in his Newcastle career. So, and again, he was doing this for a team that was not good. So that's the other big thing. So off rip, what are your thoughts on Harvey Barnes? Oh yes. And it was 13 goals and one assist last season. So
I'm particularly excited about Harvey Barnes. I mean, in relation to on the field as a replacement in that sector of attack for ASM, because of his ability to spread the ball and be unselfish. And this isn't that, it's not me calling Saint-Maximin selfish. I mean, I love the guy. I have a custom kit.
Sounds like you're calling him selfish, but okay.
But he's heads down. He's focused on breaking down players and running himself, you know, into spaces as fast as possible. And I just feel sometimes there were times I wished he would have looked up, and there were times I wish he would have thought about passing the ball first instead of getting into a shooting position first, you know? And I wonder, cause I didn't watch enough of Harvey Barnes last year, but I wonder how much Harvey is willing to work with Eddie and really apply himself defensively to this side. And that's really what we didn't see from ASM at all. Or at least not until it was too late for him, you know, in the squad, was a real application of the press and a real interest in being the first to recover the ball and then being able to look up and distribute the ball when it's recovered. And that wasn't something that was a strength of ASM. And the last thing I'll say about that is just ASM was who we needed when we needed him, and we don't need that anymore. And that's not a slight. That's just not the kind of player that fits the system.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the. I think that last point is really where I think everyone has landed. Where there's an appreciation for ASM, but I think as the season went on, and you know, it was another season in which we didn't have ASM for pretty much the entire first half of the season, and then as the season went on, it was pretty clear that like players that were had the traits of a Jacob Murphy or Miguel Almiron were just going to fit the system of Eddie Howe better. And even when ASM was healthy, it just wasn't the impact. His impact wasn't there, and his presence just wasn't felt in ways that it could have been in the past. Yeah, he still was beating guys off the dribble, but it's like, you know, there are times where it's like, there's now runners in the box. Like, Isak is waiting for the ball in the box, and we're not getting it to him. And then you have other guys who have similar quality in terms of being able to beat guys off the dribble. Like, Isak's actually a pretty good example of this, that then we're able to play within the system and set someone else up for a goal or create an actual decent chance for themselves instead of, like, ASM playing super wide and trying to dribble all the way inside and lash out a shot. So, it's certainly interesting. And then going back to the pressing stuff, Barnes does have the work rate and such to actually be a pressing presence in the Prem, and that's something that he's pretty solid at as well. So I'm very curious to see, like, what the next step for him is, because it's very odd. He's still sort of raw in some areas, but defensively, I think he's obviously going to be a much bigger upgrade. But I'm curious to see just, like, what this winger group does, especially as, like, it does seem like for Newcastle, Anthony Gordon and Harvey Barnes are going to be the forwards of the future, which is, you know, that's what it is. And so we'll see what happens. Okay, cool. So moving on, this is one that hasn't been announced yet, but we're like 90% sure it will happen. So we'll talk a little bit more about this when it happens. But Newcastle have been chasing after a certain Tino Livramento.
That's not done and dusted.
It got the Fabrizio special, but I don't actually think it's, I mean, this is per transfer mark. It actually hasn't happened. Like, I think we know the fee. I think the fee is £35 million, something along the lines, but I don't think it's been announced by the club. It hasn't been, it's certainly not showing up, you know, on the club squad page and stuff right now. So I'm going to just play it safe and say that we know that it's happening. You know, we know that it's imminent, all that kind of stuff. But as of a few days ago, it's set on that it's £30 million with add-ons, but it's supposed to be long-term successor to Trippier. He's a right back. I think there's some concerns from fans about, oh, should we be spending £30 million on a right back? If it's Josh, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a complete asshole, but it's like, if you want to achieve what Newcastle's ownership says they want to achieve, and I think Peter Silverstone, that's his name, he's the guy who's the commercial officer for Newcastle right now. He's on a podcast, and he kind of mentioned, like, he was very surprised at how ambitious the owners were, and like, he's like, he was surprised at how serious they are very serious about trying to win the league within the next five seasons, which is insane. Like, when you think about it and you think about how good Man City is and how good clubs like Liverpool and Chelsea and Man United are, but like, that's the mentality from ownership. So when ownership is told there is a really good young player, he's 20 years old, he's one of the better English right back prospects, people think he might be the starting English right back of the future after, you know, Reece James and Trippier and all that kind of stuff, and he's available, and it costs £30 million. This ownership group is like, no, you do that. Like,
yeah, you get him. And here's the thing: like, you make the deals you can make when you can make them. And exactly, maybe player in position X wasn't necessarily highest on the priority list, but he became available, or a player that one of three players that might have been targeted. So you got a position. This is my position. I want to fill this position in the future. Oh, here's my three players, 1, 2, 3. Well, maybe number one isn't available, but number two is now, for the amount that is maybe higher than I'd want to, but still within a reasonable amount. And we're going to go for that deal now because we can make that deal. And maybe that means an emergency deal or a sweetheart deal in January doesn't happen, but we've got the player for the next 5 years. You know, we've got him in the bag. We'll worry about emergency deals later. The squad is solid. The squad isn't going to win the league this year. That's not a win the league squad. But also, stranger things have happened, right? This squad that we have now is, to me, better than the Leicester squad that won the league.
Yeah. It's further where they were in their career. I mean, I would love a Conte-type player, but I'm just biased towards like box-to-box CDM, just like work rate guys. I'm like, I'd love a Lavia. But, you know, that's my bias. But, I would agree with that. And, again, I think the main point is, like, there's two big things to notice. Is like, all right, you look at Man City, for example. They just bought Garvidal for who knows what. That's a player who's not a penciled-in starter for them. Like, they spent boohoo amounts of money on a center back who's really good, really young, one of the best young center backs in the world, and he might not start for them. And it's like, I think, like, that's the level that you have to be when you are contending in the Premier League. So I wouldn't be too concerned that Newcastle are spending £30 million on a 20-year-old right back who, by the way, is one of the best young prospects in England overall. And like, you're £30 million with the English tax, mind you. So I'm excited for what he can do. There's been some rumors that he can also play a little bit of left back. That wouldn't surprise me. I'm actually curious to see when Newcastle kind of follow the trend of inverted wide backs, which that we're seeing. He could fit that mold altogether if he's playing out left. So I'm excited for this, you know, once it happens, but all that good stuff. But yeah, those are the big incomings for Newcastle. There's not really anything else to talk about. I know there's some again, and kind of what Josh was saying, and like, just to kind of not beat a dead horse, but what Josh was saying about just finding the right players at the right time that are available for the price you want, that is literally that is how the ESAC transfer is talked about, is that was a player that they had on their wish list, top of the wish list. And it just so happened that last summer he was available for a price that like Newcastle were willing to pay, and they got him. And I don't think anyone is regretting that at all.
No.
So we're going to keep it moving. Those are the incomings. I like Newcastle are likely not done. I would be surprised if they only make the three signings there. I think there could be some other things down the road, but because we still do have a month of the transfer window, so we'll stay tapped into that.
I was going to say we're going to get into the next part of this is outgoing, and I think that's critical. And if you've watched the process, it's going to be in and out, or rather, it's out and in, out and in, out and in. And if Livramento comes in, which it looks like he's going to, it looks like it's all settled, and he should be announced this week, I believe. I think we'd have to see something else go out. And so I know we're going to go over the list of outgoing, but my question to you at the end of the list of outgoing is, if there was one or two more players that were going to leave, so that it opens up enough to bring either one player in now, or if a player goes out on the last day of the transfer window and that gives us an option to bring somebody in January, maybe our discussion will change by then. But tell me, who do you think comes in by January?
I'll say this. I think it depends on what, and this is my own, just I want to make sure we're on the same page. Like, when you say going out, are you talking about funds, or are you talking about just pure roster space? So like in the Livramento situation, like, Jamal Lewis and Harrison Ashby, both kind of their loans were just announced in the last week or so. So that it kind of is a like for like. That kind of makes sense. Okay, we're bringing in a fullback. We're sending our right back out on loan. We're sending Jamal Lewis out on, I think it's a loan to buy with Watford. So like, that's a potential outgoing that creates the roster space for Livramento. But I mean, if we're talking about a similar situation where, again, like, no one knows exactly why ASM was sold, But there's a lot of rumors that it was there was, you know, that financed either the Harvey Barnes move or the Livermento move, whatever you want to believe. Is that the kind of outgoing you're talking about of like you think the, are you wondering if there's going to be another sale from Newcastle or yeah, are you just like both. Clear just both. Roster space?
I think both parts of it are important with FFP consideration. So like we're now looking at teams that are actually getting dinged by it. Like genuinely, was it Juventus? They genuinely got dinged it. Now they're not allowed to be in, what is it, the Europa Conference League. And you know, people will say, well, you know, one really wants to be in it anyway. That's bullshit. Right, you never not want to pursue great.
Yeah,
and it may, and for some teams, it may cost more than you'll make. That might be genuinely true for some teams. Like, you know, I've got to charter these flights all around Europe and go play these group stages, and I got to turn the lights on in my stadium for a couple of games that I'm not going to be able to sell out. There might be some truth to that. Not for St. James's Park, not for Geordie's. They'll show up and sell that out for anybody, but. But in terms of making sure that when the audit comes down from FIFA and from Financial Fair Play, and they want to take a look at the books, and you know, part of why did we let ASM go for so cheap? Well, part of it is to get them off the books, right? So part of it is create a situation where you have a roster spot, but also it's you know, the teams that could afford him. The teams that could afford him didn't want him, and the teams that would want him couldn't afford him was sort of how it probably went from January on to the early summer. And you finally get someone that says, well, I've got this kind of money for him. And, you know, and maybe there'll be some considerations later. I don't know what those are. I don't know how that works, but you get the player off the books. You put 25, you know, million in the coffers and you could spend it on something else. And it does a little bit of everything. So if there's another little bit of everything player, I don't know who it is. I mean, I'm not particularly dissatisfied. Yeah,
I think that's
anybody.
A tough thing for Newcastle is that like ASM was the sort of FFP, like, you know,
release valve. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Newcastle, technically speaking, like they're still fine. I mean, if anything, they're kind of almost in the exact same position. Like they're fine FFP wise. Like Mike Ashley, whether people like it or not, set them up pretty well so that they can still spend
because he's a cheap bastard.
Yeah, spend like they've wanted to, and you know, spreading the costs out over years and all that kind of stuff. That's still an option for Newcastle, and is what is technically happening. But yeah, well, let's get into ASM right now. So outgoing transfers, the first one and probably the biggest one. The other ones won't take as long. But Alan St. Maximin, after a few years here at Newcastle, is done. He's going to Saudi Arabia, joining up with all of the other teams. They've actually got the team he's on has an absolutely disgusting attack. It's like him, Mahrez, and I think Coutinho, maybe? I'm going to double check. But yeah, they have an absolutely disgusting attack. I have no idea what the Saudi League is trying to do or what they're actually doing. But yeah, so Alan St. Maximin left. Sorry, I just kind of want to see their attack, so I'm just going to go ahead and quickly look. It's ASM, Mahrez, and Bobby Firmino. Ooh, that's like a FIFA career mode attacking squad, like, or ultimate team, like. I want some pacey guys. But yeah, anyway, all that to say, ASM, he left for around 27 million euros, which is not a crazy amount of money. There was some, I think with bonuses and stuff, that number could climb up to the mid-30s. It's a very odd one because like I think the initial fees that were reported were around 35 million pounds, which feels fair value for ASM. But I don't know. I think given the situation, like you said, he wasn't the healthiest at Newcastle. The numbers, whether that's his fault or, you know, the fault of just like the systems that he was playing in, the numbers didn't add up. And then he's 26. He's in his prime. So you know, the teams that were interested in him were like AC Milan, and AC Milan is not a team that really can afford to spend money on players that they can't get a return on, which is kind of what you saw from AC Milan, is that like the only player that was kind of a likely not going to get a return on that they bought was Christian Pulisic, and that was pretty cheap, and that kind of paid for itself almost immediately with jersey sales. Everything else is like they have to buy a little bit younger just because of the financial situation that they're in. And then, like, I don't know, all around France, he's not good enough for PSG. He's not good enough for, like, some of the bigger other Italian teams like Napoli or whatever. And clearly no one in the Prem really wanted him. I think there were some talks, some teams that were a little bit rumored to have some interest in him. But again, this was the best option available. And then for him and his personal wallet, I mean, I'm sure he's not complaining about that. And I mean, like, you know, not to get super specific, but he also is Muslim. So like, it's not like it's not the shock that Ronaldo's family went through. I'll just leave it at that when they moved to a place in which you're not allowed to live with you're not allowed to live with anyone you're not married to. And Ronaldo is, of course, not married. So that's something to think about. But ASM, just thoughts on the exit. And then if you want to take some time to do an ode to ASM, you can.
No, it's I think it was a drawn out exit. I think that we were waiting for this to happen last year and hoping that since he didn't go out in January, just hoping that the second half of the year would be a healthy and productive second half. And I think there were some moments of excitement, but I don't think that he was really able to impress in a way that guaranteed that he would fight for him. Fight to keep him. It was more like, I'd like you to stay, but you know, if you gotta go, you gotta go. And so in the long run, I think it's a good move for the club. Now here's my concern with Saudi Arabia, and this could be a whole another episode, and maybe not even Newcastle specific. We could talk for hours on it, but I won't go into so much detail. I'm concerned for all of these players that are headed over there, just in terms of like your long-term, how you will be remembered, right? Maybe it's an exciting league, but who do they play? You know, their Champions League is, I think they're in the Asian Federation. So you won't be playing on TV against European teams, and you may not be as visible to national team coaches, and you may not be considered for national teams if they can't see what you're doing. You may be too far away for your national team coach to fly and watch you. And the environment in which you're playing may be too restrictive for your national team coach or scout to come and want to come and see you. And so this just might be restrictive for their legacy as players and for their ambition as national team prospects. But
it's a good shout. ASM, I mean,
I wish
you,
him the
you
best.
See it both ways. Like you look at like a guy like Hulk, who once he, you know, I think he was in China, I want to say, kind of Russia? Dropped out of the...
I think once he went to Russia, that was sort of the end of his Brazilian...
Yeah, and so it depends on the player and depends on the nation. Ronaldo's a different story. Conte, you know, a different story. But, like, ASM, like, already wasn't getting looks at the French national team. And, like, if he were to, it would have been like this next move. So he kind of given up on that, in my opinion. That's how I'd see it, is that, like, I mean, and I don't blame him either. I mean, there are so many good young French wingers. So, like, I mean, he literally he's a left winger. He's competing with Mbappe. He's competing with Mbappe and Griezmann for a spot on the team. And then behind them is like Dembele. So it's like, I completely and Kingsley Coman, like, I don't know. I understand why he's given up hope on getting called up to the French national team. It's an interesting thing. I do think like there are certain players whose legacies are going to be hurt more than others, i.e. Jordan Henderson. And that's a separate conversation. And if you want to learn more about how Liverpool fans are taking that and the discourse around that, check out our friends, the Liverpool Offside. Follow them on Twitter. That's another SB Nation site. They've been very vocal in how they feel about Jordan moving to Saudi Arabia, and his club was. They had a very interesting announcement video. So just do your own due diligence, and you can kind of see what that's about. But yeah, it's an interesting point. I will say it does feel like a lot of the guys who've moved over there, you know, some of them are Muslim, like Riyad Mahrez and Alanzi Maxman and Conte. And so I think that, like, for them, I don't want to like sound ignorant, but I think for them, it's like, it's a completely different reason and experience for, I mean, money's obviously the big thing, but it's a completely different experience and reason for them to play in Saudi Arabia, kind of one of the hubs of the Islamic world. I think it's a little bit different for them. I do think it's a little interesting when you see like a you know, Bobby Firmino is at the end of his year, but like Jordan Henderson, that's a weird one. And that's a, you're going to have to reckon with that yourself, sir, for, I don't know. Anyway. But yeah, I feel the same. I'm curious. I think that for him, it's good move. I think it's good for him and his family, for Alanzi Maxman. So good for him. I loved him at Newcastle. I think he was one of the lone bright spots of the Ashley era. And was just like, again, kind of, I mean, we don't have to go down the fun 88 rabbit hole of like social media legends, but like literally probably one of the best social media presences to ever come to Newcastle. And I honestly don't see how anyone tops that. Darren Eales might be giving a run for his money with him bringing the trophy pictures to Newcastle. But other than that, I mean, like, he's legitimately one of the funniest people who
I will tell you, you must have missed out on Sammy Amiobi, because that dude was into some hijinks.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So that's the only real big departure for Newcastle. Real quick, Matty Longstaff and Kieran Clark they kind of just opted to not re-sign with Newcastle. I'm actually not really sure where Matty Longstaff is. I think he's probably signed by now. And same with Kieran Clark. I'm not gonna lie, I don't care. So I didn't look it up. But yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Matty Longstaff because that's just a tough situation to be put in. But you know, that's neither here nor there. Kel Watts, Harrison Ashby, Yakumba and Minte, and Garon Cole, all young guys who are set to be out on. I think Cole hasn't officially been loaned out yet, but the other guys have all been loaned out. Kel Watts will be at Wigan this season in League One. Harrison Ashby is going to Swansea in the Championship on loan, which that's good for him. Young Kuba Mente, who we talked about earlier in the year, he's going to Feyenoord and Eredivisie. I do not remember where Garon Cole is going. He is going somewhere in Europe. I want to say it might be the Danish league, but again, don't call me on that. When we have the midweek episode, I will probably have an answer for you then. Other outgoings, Jamal Lewis is going to be loaned to Watford. We kind of talked about that earlier with making space for Livermento. So now Newcastle's fullbacks are Dan Byrne, Paul Dummett, Livermento, and Kieran Trippier. It's be interesting to see if they add to that group. Oh, and Matt Target. So be interesting to see if they add to that group. And then Carl Darlow had a 400,000 euro transfer to Leeds. People were like, that's a little cheap, but he was our third choice backup keeper. Yeah. I don't know what you want to call him.
I was thinking about this.
And he's also 32. I think people think Carl Darlow is still 26. Like,
I think some of the people were like trying to, in his defense, they were like, well, or maybe in the club's interest, I think we had bigger offers from other teams. But the thing was, like, one of the things you have to take into consideration is where he wants to go.
Yeah,
and he may see Leeds as a chance to bounce right back up.
Oh, yeah, and be a number one there. And yeah,
and I think that there were offers from like Hull City, but Hull City isn't going to be challenging to go back into the Prem. And Darlow,
yeah, there was, you know, yeah,
and he should have every right to say, I don't want to play at Hull. You know, can we wait and see who else comes in for me? You know, and even at the, I think that if you're a club and you do things like that for players, you become a players club, and the guys know it when they sign for you that invariably all good things must come to an end, right? At some point, Bruno's going to leave. I'm sorry, right? But at some point, at some point, Isak's going to move on. And part of the allure of playing for Newcastle to draw the next generation of superstars in is for them to know word of mouth when the time comes, Newcastle helps me get to where I want to be, regardless of money. they help me move on. And that's just part of the attraction of transferring in, is knowing that after 5 or 6 years of good service, I can go, you know, where my heart leads me. If that's to stay, great.
Or even earlier. Let's be real.
But if that's, like, that's moving home, then, you know, then it's moving home.
Yeah. Like, I mean, a good example of this is actually it didn't work out for the player the way they wanted it to, but Martin Dubravka, like Eddie Howe's thinking he's going to have the best 1-2 punch in the Prem. And Martin Dubravka's like, hey, I want to go somewhere else where there's more game time. And Eddie Howe was very clear and like, he didn't really want to lose Martin Dubravka, but he's made this clear. There's plenty of audio and podcasts and all that kind of stuff out there. His own mentality is that he wants to improve players individually. And if that means that like players end up like their goals, he wants to help them achieve their goals. So if their goal is to leave Newcastle and play somewhere bigger, or when he was at Bournemouth, leave Bournemouth and play somewhere bigger, he does not want to get in the way of that at all.
Yeah.
And he did, and to his credit, like he's very public about how much he likes the player and doesn't want it to happen, but he doesn't get in the way. Like he wanted Dubravka to stay at Newcastle. He was very open about how he didn't really want to sell ASM, but that's just what the club needed to do for financial fair play reasons. So I think that like that reputation is being proven, at least among Eddie Howe, but it's good to see that the whole club is kind of on the same page, and obviously wishing Carl Darlow the best of luck. I do think like a team like Leeds that is closer to potentially returning to the Premier League than Hull City, which is an absolute mess. They got a little bit of the Steve Bruce stench on them over the past few seasons. So, I'm happy for Carl Darlow, another player who made their transfer official for 17 million euros. So good ROI for Newcastle, all things considered. Chris Wood, Nottingham Forest, like we'd mentioned this earlier in the year, but there was an auto trigger. I want to say it must have been like two appearance trigger to make it a permanent deal. But I mean, he became a permanent deal like early on after the January window, but that's now been officially announced, done and dusted. Chris Wood is at Forest, so best luck to him as well. But yeah, so far one big outgoing, and to kind of wrap things up on outgoings, I will try to answer Josh's question to the best of my ability about potential outgoings that we could see. I'm a little shocked that nobody has really discuss Ryan Fraser, but to me that feels like the next obvious exit is Ryan Fraser. With the U23s or whatever, I think his wages are probably the biggest barrier, but
clearly not stripped of his number. Like he doesn't even have a squad number at this point.
Yeah, he's like literally on the U23s, like no squad number, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, like he's done. And so that is, it's similar to when Colback was just training with the U23s, and it was like inevitably someone's going to have to try to sign him. I think that's the case with Fraser. And Fraser, I think, is 27, 28, something like that. So still got some years on him, but just an odd situation and something you don't want as a player, where like this is two straight clubs where it looks like outwardly you've given up on the club in some way, shape, or form, or it hasn't worked out. And maybe some people trace that back to the manager and say, maybe you and Eddie Howe just don't get along, but it's not a good look. Hopefully he's moved on from, but that would be my next outgoing prediction. And then the wild card for me, I do think that like of sellable assets that it seems like Newcastle would likely get rid of, Jamal Lascelles is probably on that list, but I also don't. Captain. I just also don't think that Newcastle really, right now, you know, FFP considered, all things considered, I don't think they need to get rid of anyone just yet. But I do think next summer is probably going to be the most interesting window that we've had so far in the PIF era. I think like Miguel Almiron is probably going to have to get sold. Jacob Murphy potentially as well. Like there's going to be a lot of just like maybe Joe Willock or Joe Ellington. Like I think that next summer is the one where it's like, all right, we have to actually start getting some ROI on guys. So like you're going to see some guys who are genuinely good and deserve places in the team, probably going to get sold. And so I actually wouldn't be surprised if Joel Linton sold next summer. That's my big prediction.
That's gonna be a
sneak
tough
preview
one.
Of the of next year, the next episode after this. I don't know why I couldn't say next episode.
tongue tied.
Yeah. All right. Our short podcast is gone an hour. Josh, what's next? We got anything else?
I was thinking maybe we'd do a giveaway. I put in an order. I got myself a kit. And while I was in the the shop online, I was able to pick up a scarf, a Newcastle United scarf from their League Cup final. And well, maybe we could give it away.
Yeah, let's do it.
Pack it up and ship it. Now, it probably cost me more to send it back to England than the scarf cost. So,
well, I mean, it depends. We got a lot of American listeners. So if an American wins it, then you're golden. We're not going to rig it for an American to win. I want to make that clear. Like, statistically speaking, I think that we have more American listeners at this point. So it could be an American that wins.
It could be. And it could be that it's one of our English listeners and they already have the scarf in their shop. So, you know,
or
in
their, Swedish
in their
guy.
Collection. Or Swedish guy. So, I don't know. Where else do we have listeners?
Finland. We interviewed a guy from Finland once who was a Newcastle fan who listened to the pod. So I know there. I'll actually, you know what, that'll be my pet project is I'll look on the Spotify thing and see where we have listeners. That'd be interesting to see. So let's do a giveaway. Do you want me and you to just like make up some rules right now, or you want to make up some rules and then we'll announce the official rules of the giveaway in the next episode?
Let's convene, because I just dropped this on you tonight. So let's convene and figure out how we'll do it. I've got the scarf. I've got the packaging. I don't care where I have to ship it because I want to give it away. And then I'm getting some custom stickers made, so I'll throw some of those in there too. And we'll see who ends up with it. And then maybe it'll just be if you're subscribed, maybe we'll take a look at the list of people who are subscribed to the pod whatever we got to do. We'll figure it out. We'll give this thing away
for sure. Well, that's good. Like we said, we'll probably come back this week. We will come back this week with another episode for you. It's going to be around the same length, actually. Probably we'll talk a little bit about what our expectations are for the season, and then we'll preview the Villa match in that one. Be on the lookout for the Tonali pod. Maybe I can track someone down who knows a little thing or two about Leicester. Maybe rip a quick Harvey Barnes pod as well, or someone from Southampton. Maybe rip a Livermento pod. So just be on the lookout for stuff like that. Going to try to get into the habit of giving folks a little bit of extra content throughout the week. But yeah, that's been an episode of CHN Radio. I'm Elijah. That was Josh. Away the lads, and we love you guys. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park, if the Gallagher turn to the rain. I'm coming home. And I'm proud to be a Geordie and to live in Geordie land. Some people think we're bawdy and we're hard to understand, and they say it's just self-pity and we're not so very tough, cause the people in the big fat city haven't had it tough as rough. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wing. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we? I'm coming home." And I miss the old blind busker who stands at Fenwick's door. He plays a mean accordion, you've all seen him there before. And I love the Geordie heroes, there's so many famous names.
like Lindisfarne in Gaza, Brendan Foster in the Gates at Games. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher's End in the rain. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wine. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we?" I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher's End in the rain. I'm coming.